This is Pastor Eli James reading the 24 protocols. This episode is protocol number one, the basic doctrine. Descriptive heading, right lies in might, freedom, an idea only, liberalism, gold, faith, self-government, despotism of capital, the internal foe, the mob, anarchy, politics versus morals, the right of the strong, the invincibility of Jewish Masonic authority, end justifies the means, the mob of a blind man, political ABC, party discord, most satisfactory form of rule despotism, alcohol, classicism, corruption, principles and rules of the Jew Masonic government, terror, liberty, equality, fraternity, principle of dynastic rule, annihilation of the privileges of the Goy aristocracy, the new aristocracy, the psychological calculation, abstractness of liberty, power of removal of representatives of the people. Now the narrative. Putting aside fine phrases, we shall speak of the significance of each thought. By comparisons and deductions, we shall throw light upon surrounding facts. What I am about to set forth, then, is our system from the two points of view, that of ourselves and that of the Goyim. It must be noted that men with bad instincts are more in number than the good, and therefore the best results in governing them are attained by violence and terrorization, and not by academic discussions. Every man aims at power. Everyone would like to become a dictator if only he could, and rare indeed are the men who would not be willing to sacrifice the welfare of all for the sake of securing their own welfare. What has restrained the beasts of prey who are called men? What has served for their guidance hitherto? In the beginnings of the structure of society, they were subjected to brutal and blind force. Afterwards, to law, which is the same force, only disguised. I draw the conclusion that by the law of nature, right lies in force. Political freedom is an idea but not a fact. This idea one must know how to apply whenever it appears necessary. With this bait of an idea to attract the masses of the people to one's party for the purpose of crushing another who is in authority. This task is rendered easier if the opponent has himself been infected with the idea of freedom, so-called liberalism, and for the sake of an idea is willing to yield some of his power. It is precisely here that the triumph of our theory appears. The slackened reins of government are immediately, by the law of life, caught up and gathered together by a new hand, because the blind might of the nation cannot for one single day exist without guidance, and the new authority merely fits into place of the old already weakened by liberalism. In our day, the power which has replaced that of the rulers who were liberal is the power of gold. Time was when faith ruled. The idea of freedom is impossible of realization because no one knows how to use it with moderation. It is enough to hand over a people to self-government for a certain length of time for that people to be turned into a disorganized mob. From that moment on, we get internecine strife, which soon develops into battles between classes, in the midst of which states burn down and their importance is reduced to that of a heap of ashes. Whether a state exhausts itself in its own convulsions, whether its internal discord brings it under the power of external foes, in any case it can be accounted irretrievably lost. It is in our power. The despotism of capital, which is entirely in our hands, reaches out to a straw that the state, willy-nilly, must take hold of. If not, it goes to the bottom. Should anyone of a liberal mind say that such reflections as the above are immoral, I would put the following questions. If every state has two foes, and if in regard to the external foe it is allowed and not considered immoral to use every manner of art and conflict, as, for example, to keep the enemy in ignorance of plans of attack and defense, to attack him by night or in superior numbers, then in what way can the same means in regard to a worse foe, the destroyer of the structure of society and the commonwealth, be called immoral and not permissible? Is it possible for any sound logical mind to hope with any success to guide crowds by the aid of reasonable counsels and arguments, when any objection or contradiction, senseless though it may be, can be made, and when such objection may be found more favor with the people, whose powers of reasoning are superficial? Men in masses and the men of the masses, being guided solely by petty passions, paltry beliefs, customs, traditions, and sentimental theorism, fall a prey to party dissension, which hinders any kind of agreement, even on the basis of a perfectly reasonable argument. Every resolution of a crowd depends upon a chance or packed majority, which, in its ignorance of political secrets, put forth some ridiculous resolution that lays in the administration a seed of anarchy. The political has nothing in common with the moral. The ruler who is governed by the moral is not a skilled politician, and is therefore unstable on his throne. He who wishes to rule must have resource both to cunning and to make-believe. Great national qualities, like frankness and honesty, are vices in politics, for they bring down rulers from their thrones more effectively and more certainly than the most powerful enemy. Such qualities must be the attributes of the kingdoms of the Goyim, but we must in no wise be guided by them. Our right lies in force. The word right is an abstract thought and proved by nothing. The word means no more than, : give me what I want in order that thereby I may have a proof that I am stronger than you. Where does right begin? Where does it end? In any state in which there is a bad organization of authority, any impersonality of laws, and of the rulers who have lost their personality amid the flood of rights ever multiplying out of liberalism, I find a new right, to attack by the right of the strong, and to scatter to the winds all existing forces of order and regulation, to reconstruct all institutions and to become the sovereign lord of those who have left us the rights of their power by laying them down voluntarily in their liberalism. Our power in the present tottering condition of all forms of power will be more invisible than any other, because it will remain invisible until the moment when it has gained such strength that no cunning can any longer undermine it. Out of the temporary evil we are now compelled to commit will emerge the good of an unshakable rule, which will restore the regular course of the machinery of the national life, brought to naught by liberalism. The result justifies the means. Let us, however, in our plans, direct our attention not so much to what is good and moral as to what is necessary and useful. Before us is a plan in which is laid down strategically the line from which we cannot deviate, without running the risk of seeing the labor of many centuries brought to naught. In order to elaborate satisfactory forms of action, it is necessary to have regard to the rascality, the slackness, the instability of the mob, its lack of capacity to understand and respect the conditions of its own life or its own welfare. It must be understood that the might of a mob is blind, senseless, and unreasoning force, ever at the mercy of a suggestion from any side. The blind cannot lead the blind without bringing them into the abyss. Consequently, Members of the mob, upstarts from the people, even though they should be as a genius for wisdom, yet having no understanding of the political, cannot come forward as leaders of the mob without bringing the whole nation to ruin. Only one trained from childhood for independent rule can have understanding of the words that can be made up out of the political alphabet. A people left to itself, i.e., to upstarts from its midst, brings itself to ruin by party dissensions, excited by the pursuit of power and honors and the disorders arising therefrom. Is it possible for the masses of the people calmly and without petty jealousies to form judgments, to deal with the affairs of the country, which cannot be mixed up with personal interests? Can they defend themselves from an external foe? It is unthinkable, for a plan broken up into as many parts as there are heads in the mob loses all homogeneity, and thereby becomes unintelligible and impossible of execution. It is only with a despotic ruler that plans can be elaborated extensively and clearly in such a way as to distribute the whole properly among the several parts of the machinery of the state. From this, the conclusion is inevitable that a satisfactory form of government or for any country is one that concentrates in the hands of one responsible person. Without an absolute despotism, there can be no existence for civilization, which is carried on not by the masses, but by their guide, whosoever that person might be. The mob is a savage and displays its savagery at every opportunity. The moment the mob seizes freedom in its hands, it quickly turns into anarchy, which in itself is the highest degree of savagery. Behold the alcoholized animals, bemused with drink, the right to an immoderate use of which comes along with freedom. It is not for us and ours to walk that road. The peoples of the Goyim are bemused with alcoholic liquors. Their youth has grown stupid on classicism and from early immorality, into which it has been inducted by our special agents, by tutors, lackeys, governesses in the houses of the wealthy, by clerks and others, by our women in the places of dissipation, frequented by the Goyim. In the number of these last, I count also the so-called society ladies, voluntary followers of the others in corruption and luxury. Our countersign is force and make-believe. Only force conquers in political affairs, especially if it be concealed in the talents essential to statesmen. Violence must be the principle and cunning the make-believe, the rule for governments which do not want to lay down their crowns at the feet of agents and some new power. This evil is the one and only means to attain the end, the good. Therefore, we must not stop at bribery, deceit, and treachery when they should serve towards the attainment of our end. In politics, one must know how to seize the property of others without hesitation, if by it we secure submission and sovereignty. Our state, marching along the path of peaceful conquest, has the right to replace the horrors of war by less noticeable and more satisfactory sentences of death, necessary to maintain the terror which tends to produce blind submission. Just but merciless severity is the greatest factor of the strength in the state, not only for the sake of gain, but also in the name of duty. For the sake of victory, we must keep the program of violence and make-believe. The doctrine of squaring accounts is precisely as strong as the means of which it makes use. Therefore, it is not so much by the means themselves as by the doctrine of severity that we shall triumph and bring all governments into subjection to our supergovernment. It is enough for them to know that we are merciless, for all disobedience to cease. Far back in ancient times, we were the first to cry among the masses of the people the words liberty, equality, fraternity. Words many times repeated since those days by stupid poll parrots, who from all sides round flew down upon these baits, and with them carried away the well-being of the world, true freedom of the individual, formerly so well guarded against the pressure of the mob. The would-be wise men of the Goyim, the intellectuals, could not make anything out of the uttered words in their abstractness, did not note the contradiction of their meaning and interrelation, did not see that in nature there is no equality, cannot be freedom, that nature herself has established inequality of minds, of characters, and capacities, just as immutably as she has established subordination to her laws. Never stopped to think that the mob is a blind thing, that upstarts elected from among it bear rule are, in regard to the political, the same blind men as the mob itself. That the adept, though he be a fool, can yet rule, whereas the non-adept, even if he were a genius, understands nothing in the political. To all these things the Goyim paid no regard. Yet all the time it was based upon these things that dynastic rule rested. The father passed on to the son a knowledge of the course of political affairs in such wise that none should know it but the members of the dynasty, and none could betray it to the governed. As time went on, the meaning of the dynastic transference of the true position of affairs in the political was lost, and this aided the success of our cause. In all corners of the earth, the words liberty, equality, fraternity brought to our ranks, thanks to our blind agents, the whole legions who bore our banners with enthusiasm. And all the time, these words were cankerworms at work boring into the well-being of the Goyim, putting an end everywhere to peace, quiet, solidarity, and destroying all the foundations of the Goy states. As you will see later, this helped us to our triumph. It gave us the possibility, among other things, of getting into our hands the master card, the destruction of the privileges, or in other words, of the very existence of the aristocracy of the Goyim. That class which was the only defense peoples and countries had against us. On the ruins of the natural and genealogical aristocracy of the Goyim, we have set up the aristocracy of our educated class, headed by the aristocracy of money. The qualifications for this aristocracy we have established in wealth, which is dependent upon us, and in knowledge, for which our learned elders provide the motive force. Our triumph has been rendered easier by the fact that in our relations with the men whom we wanted to have always worked upon the most sensitive chords of the human mind, upon the cash account, upon the cupidity, upon the insatiability for material needs of man, and each one of these human weaknesses taken alone is sufficient to paralyze initiative, for it hands over the will of men to the disposition of him who has bought their activities. The abstraction of freedom has enabled us to persuade the mob in all countries that their government is nothing but the steward of the people who are the owners of the country, and that the steward may be replaced like a worn-out glove. It is this possibility of replacing the representatives of the people which has placed them at our disposal and, as it were, given us the power of appointment.